Ladies and gentlemen, Passion Flower. Can you remember the 12th of December when you took my hand? All fellow wannabes, welcome to the show. You are listening to Wannabe Music Reviews from Wannabe Critic Productions, and I am your host, Gabriel Fast. Today we're doing another interview. We are sitting down with Kyle Richardson, and is it Nickel is your last name? Kyle Richardson,
yeah,
Nickel?
Nickel.
Okay,
yeah.
Kyle Richardson Nickel, the brainchild behind Passion Flower. Kyle, how are you feeling today, man?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for agreeing to come on the show and be able to chat with me for a few minutes and, you know, kind of talk about what you're doing over there. But if you don't mind, you know, I know who you are, obviously, but most people who are listening to this probably have no idea who you are. So tell us, why are you here? Who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah.
God. So I like to call the genre post-emo band. Sort of, it's like a mix of the early noughties, pop punk, emo and post-hardcore with a few modern twists inside it. Write really sad songs with catchy lyrics, big hooks, sort of a feel-good factor, even though the songs are really bleak. Sort of a onomatopoeia in a song form, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way to sum it up. You actually sent me, you've had a few tracks come out over the past year, right? Mm-hmm. That have done relatively well and are really, really good songs. You know, you had your most recent one, which the name escapes me for some reason. what was the name of your most recent single?
Joel and Clementine.
Yeah, Joel and Clementine, which is a reference to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, correct? And I saw Wendy's. Wendy's gave you a shout out on Twitter.
It did. Yeah, Wendy's approved.
Yeah, you are Wendy's approved officially. And that's cool to be able to get notoriety from, you know, somewhere kind of weird, but in a weird, it's like, oh, people notice, yeah. Right? You know what I mean? And then obviously, you know, what was been 6, 7, 8 months ago, you had put out your single Picture Perfect, which is what you sent to me.
The first one from the sort of album cycle that I'm sort of working towards at the moment.
Yeah. And man, I remember getting that song and, you know, I did a video on it and, you know, I really, really enjoyed that song. And I think, you know, whenever it kind of all came together for me that you had played everything yourself, it was just, there was a level of respectability, I think, that I could kind of connect with, you know, because I kind of make my, I dabble, you know, I do stuff on my own thing. Yeah. And, you know, it's a really, really good song. You know, both are good songs. And I can definitely see kind of the theme you're going towards, you know, with the record and things like that, which, by the way, you know, what are the plans for the record? I mean, when are we getting the Passion Flower record? Just tell us.
When are we getting it? I'm still working out all the details to give out a solid date, because there's lots of other factors that I need to sort out for it. Like, the album itself is done. It's finished. Like, if it all these other factors didn't have to come into play, I could just release it tomorrow and it'd be there out in the nude. But because I'm not able to just release it, i.e. with all the promotional materials, like with music videos and all the other bits, like, that's a huge factor of promoting it and making it seen, especially at the moment where shows aren't really a thing. Yeah. Like, I've got to rely on the song, really, and the packaging of the songs.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I've had a couple of people on within the past week or two that have kind of talked about, you know, kind of spoken to COVID. That's got to be kind of a crappy feeling whenever, like, you have all these aspirations and, like, you want to put out this, you know, this record's going to be a banger, right? You know, like, you sit down with it, you listen to it, and it's like, oh, this is the one, right? And, like, you're really, really excited for it. And then COVID happens, and then pretty much all of your hopes and dreams of playing these songs live, doing all this stuff, you know, talking about it, interacting with your fans and stuff like that, you're just so limited, you know, to how much reach you actually have. And, you know, I've talked to this about a few times with other people. Does the paradigm kind of shift from, like, oh, I have to put out a really great record, to now I have to put out a really, really good song so that it can end up on a, you know, has the best chance of ending up on a playlist? Like, is that mentality kind of there a little bit for you?
It's kind of a mix of both, because all the singles that I've put out so far, so you've got your Picture Perfect, your Neverland, and your Julian Clem, they all kind of, even though they all sound different, they all blend the same, and it's kind of the same with the rest of the songs off the album as well. So when it comes to choosing a song to put out, it's kind of difficult because the thought process of the writing. Yeah, so it's sort of like, it's the thought process behind it is, yeah, I do want these songs to do well and go in playlists individually, but obviously they come back to the collective of the album.
Right.
So thematically, I want the album to do well.
Right.
But if these singles can do well on their own to boost what the album is, then I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. And I think, like, I'm not a playlist person. I'm an album person. Like, I want, you know, and if I really love an album, I'll, you know, I buy it on vinyl because I want to hear that lossless quality, you know, that more raw quality. Yeah. And you know, to me, like, I remember hearing Picture Perfect and being like, oh, I would love to have, you know, like a little not a 45, but, you know, just a little, like, sample, right? You know, like one of those sample vinyls to have it. Like, I think that'd be a super dope song to have on vinyl. And I think another thing I've been hearing about, you know, is how people, they'll have an idea for, like, a full record, but they only release part of it, like in one part of the year. So, like, they'll put out four songs, and, like, that is, like, the strict mentality is, like, okay, we'll put out three or four different chunks of this album and then try and get them all on playlists. And then hopefully whenever we actually release the full deluxe edition with a couple extra songs, you know, people all come back to it, you know, and yeah. It'll have the best chance of, you know, like kind of piggybacking off itself and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool to hear, you know, somebody who is more kind of on the up and coming and like aspiring to be something bigger, talking about kind of like what the mentality is and like the best strategic way to kind of approach it. How has your audience responded, you know, to the past couple of songs? Like this is, to my knowledge, this is the first stuff you've ever really put out, right?
Yeah. So even though I've been around for a bit, I've only just kind of been releasing music the past year. So I've been, the fear was, especially with Picture Perfect being the first single, how people will react to it and like how it will, you know, come across and how it'll be perceived. And Picture Perfect got on like a house on fire and people really, really enjoyed it. And the feedback was really positive, which obviously made me feel really good because I was so anxious about releasing it. And that's me every release week. Like I just sit there at my computer like, oh man, how are people going to react to it? And then the same with Neverland, because really the sound is complete. If so, even though it's the same, it's different. So like Picture Perfect's more of this easy breezy, oh, it's a love song, oh, it's very pop punk. And then you've got Neverland, which is like, oh, I'm so angsty.
Yeah.
Oh, and then like,
I think, you know, the vibes for me, it was kind of like a I'm not okay type vibe for, you know, for Picture Perfect, which was, you know, that's like the highest praise I think you could give someone who's attempting to do something like what you're doing. And it very much felt like, you know, there's more to the story type thing. And, you know, which I really appreciated in that. But then, yeah, I mean, it's a completely different feeling within even the next two songs. Like it follows a theme, but it also is like, oh, you know, there's more here than meets the eye. You know, this isn't going to be a pop punk record, really. It's going to be kind of like what you're saying, like post emo, like it just kind of encapsulates that entire genre and all of its, you know, subsidiary genres that have branched off of it. And I think it's, you know, what you're trying to do, I think is really, really cool, you know, and it's gotta be hard whenever, you know, I think that speaks to how it's going to be impactful for other people is whenever you just sit there and like kind of stew about it and you're like, oh God, like, how's this going to go over? I think you're at least going to touch one person's life with something that you put out, which should be the goal, really. I mean, one person, right?
That is entirely the goal. Like for me, these songs that I wrote, like really coming up to 4 years ago now, like come from such like a dark place. Even the, you know, the more happier sounding songs where they sound more hopeful come from such a awful part of my life where I felt so hopeless. So for me, for people to come and reach out to me and be like, you know, this song makes me feel something in some sort of way, honestly means the world to me, because it stems from wanting to be understood. And that's what I think everyone wants at the end of the day, is to just, you know, feel like someone's there and gets them and understands them. And if I can be that for someone, like say like the bands of the past have been there for me, then that is mission accomplished and everything, really.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, the thought that pops into my head most naturally is like, oh, like I wonder what his influences are. You know, it makes you want to kind of like go diving into like, what are the bands that kind of influence you, you know, and like start asking those questions. And I think that's actually a pretty good segue. Like what do you think your main influences are for this record moving forward?
Oh, so it's kind of there's kind of four bands that I think really, if I had to say it was the baby of, I'd say it was Alexis on Fire, the sort of the hard post-hardcore sound with the melodic parts. You've got your Fall Out Boy, sort of your, you know, Hit This To Your Grave to Infinity on High era, kind of, because that for me is peak Fall Out Boy. That's my favorite era, songwriting wise. You've got the Used to sort of the weird kind of intricate bits, and then you've got Say Anything for sort of the skeptical, analytical sort of play.
Yeah, I think that's all of those influences, I mean, you can definitely hear that those are present for sure on these songs. And, you know, I think for me, I always ask my guests, you know, this question, you know, that I have on that make music and stuff. Like whenever I'm writing a song or whatever, and I'm kind of like, oh, like this kind of has like an X, you know, a whatever vibe to it. You know, I think I, on the last interview, I said like, oh, this feels kind of like Queens of the Stone Age. Like, you know, I want to pursue that more. Does there ever come a time for you where you're kind of like, oh, like this kind of sounds like such and such, I'm going to pursue this harder, I'm going to pursue that sound? Or do you find yourself kind of like shying away from it and being like, yeah, people are going to call me on the carpet though, you know, if I pursue this one avenue, like people are going to be like, oh, well, you just ripped off.
Yeah. Like I'm one of those people because I listen to such a broad spectrum of music from different genres. I tried like not to pigeonhole myself into sounding like this band or this, but because obviously that band is that band. So I don't want to be like the 20th, like Neck Deep ripoff, or the 50th, like, Mike Hemp ripoff, or, you know, I want to kind of do something where I can honor my influences, take what I think are the best part of those and kind of incorporate those into like my music to kind of, and that kind of make what I'm about a bit better, if you know what I mean.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. You don't want to be generic, and you don't want to be, you know, one of my favorite things to do. And I think no idea is original anymore. God, I get really burpy. You know what I mean? Like no idea is original anymore. And I think you're going to always have those things where, because whenever I listen to music and whenever I'm like trying to put together a video, and you know, my thoughts for a video, I naturally gravitate towards what's the most easiest thing to talk about. And to me, the easiest thing to do is compare someone else to something else. And it's like, oh, I really appreciate this track because I kind of have this type of vibe to it. Or, you know, throughout the record, I kind of feel this vibe. I don't think you're directly saying like, oh, they sound like this person. But in terms of how the other band makes me feel, it kind of correlates to, you know, this other product essentially that you're kind of indulging in. And that's, I think that's also, it can be tricky sometimes because, you know, I'm sure I've said stuff in reviews that if other bands had ever heard, they'd be like, oh, like, I don't really like that. I don't really take that as a compliment, but you know, that's kind of where having an opinion comes into play and things like that. But I definitely, you know, I think the cool thing that Passion Flower has going for it is that if you have an interest in any of those genres, if you have the interest in the Fall Out Boy, if you have the interest in the My Chemical Romance and the Used, if you have the interest in, you know, Panic at the Disco or anything that kind of all of those things branch off of, I think you'll be able to connect with the music, which it sounds like that's kind of your goal, you know, is to get people just to connect with the music. And what better way to do that than to kind of pander to those various interests? And I think that's, you know, the music is kind of doing that. What would you say the hardest part has been, you know, in kind of trying to craft this album and really even craft the singles? Like what's been like the most taxing on you as the creator?
I guess really kind of doing everything myself. Like when you're in a band, you've got like three or four different dudes all contributing ideas. You may have like some sort of management who also contributes ideas and gets the ball rolling in different ways. So I guess for me, the hardest thing is kind of wearing all of the hats rather than just wearing like maybe two or three of the hats. Especially like, cause I'm one of them people that I am so critical of myself, especially when it comes to my like songs and like being creative, because for me, there's loads of people that can do it better, but then no one can do it like me in the same way. Like, I do me best, like everyone else does the self best. So I find it difficult just to, you know, keep up sometimes. But then it's also fun to grind out. Like I can come up with an idea, I think it's really good, and then keep listening to it. And then, you know, the one time out of 10 that I listen to it and think it's not good, that's when my analytical brain will come on and be like, right, so what can I fix? What can I improve on? And that, you know, sometimes that's hard as well, because just to figure out what the process is and creatively and sort of, you know, try and make it different every time. So it's not just the same song, but rehashed 7, 8, 12 times, you know what I mean?
Right.
So sort of adding to the arrangements and see like what I can divvy out and make different is also quite difficult as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I can only imagine, you know, you've been cooped up in your apartment for the past year, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, whenever you don't get different things to look at and different things to experience, you know, your music doesn't get affected as much because the things you're experiencing, you know, you're directly influenced by your surroundings. So, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And I you spoke to something whenever you were talking, I was literally thinking like, I'm going to ask him, or I'm going to say this thing. And you basically said it best. It's like, it doesn't matter really if someone's better than you, you know, it doesn't matter if someone's a better drummer than you, like, or if they can play the, you know, play the part better, quote unquote, or they're more talented. It doesn't matter if it doesn't end up sounding the way you want it to sound. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's kind of my thing too, is like, I play everything myself and I mix and master everything myself. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't sound good, people just won't hear it because it's hard to relinquish that trust in a way, you know? And I think that's, you know, I think if you have the wherewithal to where it's like, I know how all the parts should sound in my head and I have the time to make it sound good, that's awesome. Because then you have full control of how the record sounds. But the problem is whenever you go to play it for other people, you know, and like, how are you going to play it live? You know? And I think that's kind of where having a band be a part of the recording process and, you know, kind of like the whole inception of a record really comes into play because you have all these people speaking the same language and making contributions. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that might be the biggest challenge whenever things do start opening back up, you know, like trying to find, you know, and I guess it'd be pretty rad to do it like an acoustic, you know, you know, play everything acoustic too. I mean, but yeah, it's interesting to hear you kind of talk about, you know, the biggest challenges. And, you know, we kind of talked about COVID for a second, like how have you kind of dealt with that whole process? You know, like how have you coped, rather, you know, what's that been like for you the past year?
So a lot of ebbs and flows, lots of peaks and valleys, for sure, especially with over here in the UK, we've had 3 separate lockdowns over the past, well, year now. I think this week's like the year anniversary of when the UK went into lockdown. So over the 3 different lockdowns, it's been different each time. So the first lockdown, everyone was more communicating and, you know, talking. So I was more open to talking to friends and being on group chats and being on Zooms. And then sort of the second one, less people talked, but there was still some sort of communication. And then this time I've talked to very few people. So those few people who know who they are have very much kept me sane the last couple of months, and I appreciate them so much. I've been watching a lot of TV shows, and I'm rewatching a lot of older TV shows and movies. So that's also, you know, helped the creative juices flow in as well. Playing a lot of video games as well, especially because when you're stuck with nothing to do, you want to keep your hands busy. So I've been playing a few video games, but mostly writing music. Like, I've been over the past 12 months just writing and writing and writing and, you know, trying different things out and trying different sounds and just seeing what I can come up with, really, to further what Passion Flower is.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so it sounds like pretty much your situation is a lot like all of us. You know, it's like, just do what you can. It's funny, you know, we live in the country, and I've talked about this umptillion times on shows and stuff like that, about how I feel like this whole pandemic has really kind of shown us like who we really are as people, actually. And it's like, don't really miss you. I don't really miss you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really miss, there's certain aspects of the social, you know, like landscape that I actually do miss. But for the most part, like, I'm still pretty content. Like, I started a business in COVID, and like, you know, I really hunkered down and like tried to, I'm trying to like do more with my video stuff. And, you know, it's been a really interesting process, you know, but at the same time, I think I've suffered as a human being a little bit, you know, just because you don't want as much, you don't really need as much social interaction, I guess, you know. And of course, I'm married, so I'm with my best friend like 99% of the time. So it's been one of those things like, what more do you need, you know? And but I mean, so you say, you know, that's a big thing that we cover is games, you know, from Wannabe Critic Productions. What kind of games you've been playing?
Oh, so I'm into sort of platformers and beat 'em ups, hack and slashes, like something with a good storyline that I can just fall into and like just forget about everything else for a couple of hours, maybe a couple of days, depending on how long the storyline is. Like,
go ahead. Sorry.
What was I playing? I started to replay Shadow of Mordor. So that's like really a long game.
Oh yeah.
Like, to just go through. And it's a lot of strategy, and you have to think about what you're doing. And I'm just there like, I don't just want to kill people. Just slash my way through.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of funny. You know, I actually love that game because, you know, I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan anyways, but yeah, it's kind of cool to you know, hear you talk about that. And I have to ask too, like, is there any like game soundtracks that like really like kind of strike a chord with you, you know, as a musician? Because like for me, I have a bunch of like soundtracks on vinyl that I'll just like throw on and listen to.
Yeah,
and, like, I love them, you know. Is there any soundtracks that like really speak to you, or it's like, oh man, like I love this album?
So not necessarily game soundtracks, but film soundtracks. I love, especially because you've mentioned Lord of the Rings and I've mentioned Lord of the Rings, the free Lord of the Rings by Howard Shore, amazing. Some of my favorite pieces of music are on that. Weirdly, I'm going to mention John Williams and the Star Wars soundtrack, but primarily Attack of the Clones. And I know like loads of people hate that film. I'm like, it's not the best, but it's one of my favorite ones. But that soundtrack is phenomenal. Like episode 2 and episode 3, like some of my favorite pieces. What's it called? To the Stars, the Lover's Theme from episode 2 is probably one of my favorite like composed pieces of all time.
Like, it's iconic. It's so good. It's
so iconic. But because it's part of like the worst Star Wars film, it doesn't get enough like praise, and I don't know, people are wilding out here.
I mean, don't even get me started on Star Wars, because you know we talk about that all the time on the show. And you know, the music for me, it doesn't matter. Like, I love it all. I see the flaws in all of it. I love all of it. Like, mm-hmm. I definitely have my personal favorites for sure. But Attack of the Clones, I mean, it is what it is. You know, it serves its purpose. And I think I actually like it more now, having actually gone through Clone Wars, you know, and kind of like, yeah. But anyways, I think my internet keeps like cursing me because I'm talking about, you know, it's like, don't you ever say anything good about the prequels. You know what I mean? It's like, just is what's happening. But long story short, you know, I love the music. I actually have the first film on vinyl, and I love listening to it. But it's nice to know that you're a fellow Star Wars fan, you're a fellow gamer as well, and you know, some of my favorite pieces of music ever, you know, are from gaming soundtracks. And there's just something about it, man, like that just kind of sucks you in more than, you know, anything else really. And that's why I don't watch a lot of TV. Like, I like to stay busy doing something, you know, even if that's just progressing in a game and stuff like that. And, you know, you might be able to relate to that. But what's like your favorite thing to do? You know, do you have anything outside of like TV watching where you're just like, okay, this is kind of like my safe space. Like, this is what I want to do to like unwind a little bit. Like, what is like some of your favorite things to do? Like, for me, like, I love grilling. You know, that's like, I can think, you know, I just like to think about whatever, and I'm just focused. I'm like hyper focused on that one thing. Like, do you have anything kind of outside of a screen that you enjoy doing for you?
I love going on walks. Like, I love just like, I'm fortunate because where I live, there's like little bits of Greenland that I can just go and explore for a bit. So I like to just go out and just go and immerse myself in nature, mostly by myself as well, like just throw on some headphones and just go wander for a bit with no timelines, no time constraints. Just go see how far I can go before I'm like, I don't know where I am anymore. I think that's a good thing that people should do. Like, I'm guilty of not doing it as much as I used to do. But now, like, now the weather is getting warmer, so I'm now more inclined to go back out and just explore a bit more again. So I'm looking forward to getting out there again and just going for long walks and getting lost.
Yeah, no, I bet. And you know, I'm not really savvy to what the situation is for COVID right now over there, Is there, I mean, when is it looking like you're going to be able to get back out there and do stuff again? I mean, is there any updates on that?
It's a weird one. So as of yesterday being Monday, we were allowed people to sit in our back gardens or up to a group of six in your back garden, which is nice if you have six people to invite over. we're reopening non-essential shops in 3 weeks, the 12th of April. So that's like when most businesses are going to be reopening and stuff. And I think they're saying for the COVID roadmap that it's going to be sort of June where shows and really everything's going to be reopened again. I'm skeptical because they've done it before and then really quickly changed their mind. But I'm also really optimistic and hoping that, you know, we can have some sort of normality society-wise, because I think really a lot of people do need that. I was fine because before COVID, I was a hermit. Like, I went to work, I went home, and maybe once a week, I might see some friends. And, but really, I'm like, I'm comfortable in my own company. So really, COVID's been not amazing, but like, I've managed to cope with it quite well by going, well, really, I didn't see anyone anyway. So the missing people thing isn't like major. Like, it's like a little bit because it's not more. Before, not going out was more optional, but now it was kind of more mandatory. So I think when like the world sort of does reopen up, I'll probably take more opportunities to meet up with more people and go see more places and do more things.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, there's only I miss going to grab a beer with friends, you know, and I miss going to the theater. That's like the biggest thing I miss, I think, is going to the movie theater. But yeah, I'm kind of the same way as you, though. Like, but before COVID, you know, if you told me I could have stayed in my office and no one would have judged me, you know, and I mean, I have a mini fridge in here, so there's beverages, there's snacks in here, you know what I mean? Like, if you're telling me, like, there was going to be a time where you could literally not be judged for just staying in your office all day, every day, I would have said, you're full of it, you know what I mean? But here we are, you know, and look at us go.
It's a new normal at the moment. Like, there's some people that haven't probably wore, like, proper pants in a whole year, down my buttons or doing them Zoom meetings with no pants on whatsoever.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I wore pants for the first time in a long time a couple of days ago for a special event, you know, just kind of out of respect for the event and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I'm straight up gym shorts, like, at all times, you know, and comfort level is at an all-time high.
Oh, it is. It really is.
But it's
in the days where I can wear jeans regularly and it not be like a special occasion of just like my everyday thing again.
No, it totally makes sense. I have to ask too, you know, this isn't directly related to music, but you know, you're over, what part of the UK are you actually in?
So I'm in the northwest of the UK. So location wise, I'm in between Manchester and Liverpool in a town called Warrington.
Okay, nice. So is there, like, you know, I'm a big beer fan. Well, you know, we have a show that we used to do called Beer Bros. And I have to ask, like, is there any breweries over there or anything like that? Like, are you a beer fan at all? I mean, I'm curious, like, in that area, you know, what do you got? What are your options?
Yeah, I think so. Mostly the breweries will be sort of your Manchester and your Liverpool, the two big sort of metropolis like cities. I think we've got a brewery in Warrington called 40s. I can't recall if I've tasted anything they've put out, but I probably have because they would probably go into the local pubs. But no names of the beers jump out at me, so I might not have liked them as much as other beers.
Okay, right on. So, like, do you have like any sort of food like preferences? Like, do you cook much? I mean, do you like in terms of like customs? Because I've talked to the Reckless guys before, you know, we did like a British slang episode, you know, but I'm actually super interested like in the culture of what it's like over there, you know, cause I mean, I'm interested in what it's like, you know? So like, what is your like routine look like in terms of like cooking and stuff like that, and you know, like what are some like popular dishes that are over there?
So really, obviously, with the UK kind of being like the world colonizer, like, so everywhere like they've been, they've taken something back with them. So it's quite interesting what British cuisine is. So obviously we're probably most famous for, you know, having tea and afternoon tea and stuff like that, and, you know, fish and chips, which is really good. And you've, if you've never had fish and chips, you should, because it's amazing. It's so good.
Fish and like, loves it. Fish and fries, basically. Is that pretty much what it is? Like fish and like French shit? Like,
it's funny because like over here, fish and so chips are like thick fries. So they're specifically just called chips. And we have fries, which are fries. It's weird because I've got quite a few American friends and we get into it over like what everything's called, because obviously you call chips what we call crisps, you guys call chips, and then it's the whole other kettle of fish, like, especially when you get into the potato region.
Oh, yeah, no, and that's the thing too, is me and potatoes got a thing going on.
Oh, it gets fierce.
Yeah, no,
it gets fierce. Yeah. It's been known to divide friendships internationally.
That's the thing though, is for whatever reason, like, I love arguing. Like, I've gotten better about it, you know, and I guess not arguing, I guess like debating, you know, about, you know, and it's not even so much a thing of like, oh, you're wrong, I'm right. I actually hate that. I hate when people are like, oh, well, you're wrong. You know what I mean? Like, that's like one of my least favorite things. And like, that is literally not allowed on the podcast for anyone to be like, oh, well, your opinion is wrong. Now, factually, you know what I mean? Like, whenever there's little room for interpretation and like little room for whatever, it's like, no, factually, like, this is how it is, then that's kind of a different story. And I, if someone's like hardcore disagreeing with me on the facts, then they're not reasonable. And I don't want to waste my time trying to, like, you know, have a discussion with them, because, you know, there's reasonableness and everything. But, you know, when it comes to potatoes and potato classifications, I don't care. To me, it's just a potato. You know what I mean? But like fish and chips, I've never had traditional ones. I've had them, you know, like Americanized, obviously, like I've had American versions of it and stuff like that. But now I do have to ask, like, do you sit down for afternoon tea?
I do not. And I have never, never sat down for afternoon tea. I am not that dude.
Is that kind of like a proper type thing? Or, I mean, do a lot of people do that?
Like, I mean, it's quite a common thing. It's not like an everyone thing, but it's more of a higher society, more of a middle class to higher class kind of thing. Like, working class people, you wouldn't really catch, you know, sitting round in a garden going, oh, tea. Like, it's not a thing we all do.
And like, literally anytime, like British television in general, like anytime they're just showing it off, it's like, that must be how it is. You know what I mean? That's really funny.
Listen, yeah. I have massive hands. I don't have time for tiny sandwiches. Like, yeah. I need, give me a foot long or give me nothing.
Yeah, a foot long. I go ham or not. Like, that's it.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, no, that's funny. Yeah.
I go home.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Go ham or go home.
These crustless tiny stuff.
Yeah, no, I've always been curious, you know, and it's been funny. I've wanted to get the Reckless guys on here before, you know, kind of talk about it a little bit more, but, you know, obviously they're busy and so am I. But it's nice to be able to talk to someone from that area that can kind of shed some light on, you know, what it's like over there. Now, one thing that I've seen before, you know, back to the music discussion, I've always seen, or what it seems to be like, a really supportive kind of dynamic in terms of like the music scene. Like, so like here in America, everyone's competing with each other. Like, it's all competition. It's all like, oh, well, this got this many numbers, like, and this got this many likes and blah, 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 blah. It's all about that. Whereas it kind of seems like in a different, you know, over in that area where you are, it seems like there's a pretty much, it appears to have like a bigger support system, especially for like local music. Can you kind of speak to that a little bit? I mean, what have you found to be kind of the norm with that?
Yeah, so for me personally, because I live in the middle of two big cities, I kind of, and there's not really like a pop punk scene in Warrington. Like, there's the true punk and then there's what I'm doing. So even though I'm friends with those dudes, I'm kind of not in that main circle, if you know what I mean. And then the scene at large in my town is more of a, you know, an indie rock kind of thing. So again, it's kind of, I'm in it, but I'm not in it. So I more gravitate towards like the scenes of the two bigger cities, which is quite nice because actually they blend together quite well as well, especially like Liverpool. Like they're really friendly and, you know, welcoming. Like that's where like the guys in the K come from. So I'm like good friends with them and like loads of other bands from like that region. And sort of the same with Manchester as well. Like there is like this big sense of community sort of around the area. And it's not really, I don't feel like there's this big competitive thing, but I imagine that some bands or some people internally would be quite competitive. Like, well, that band got that many likes, we need to get this many likes on this post, or they got this many views, which is, you know, fine. Cause, you know, a little bit of healthy competition makes people grow and, you know, want to strive to be better. But really, like, just everyone should just be chill, I think. Like, if you're all putting out good music and, you know, people enjoy it and you enjoy doing it, then it's all chill. It's all good.
Yeah, no, it is. I agree. And I think for me too, I think it also kind of like just watching other bands. Like I think about, like, have you heard of Magnolia Park?
Yes.
Right.
Magnolia Park.
So super good music, right? And just there's things like, I think there's kind of like a built-in need to want to try and do the best you can. And I think that can kind of come across as like, you know, not condescending, but a little bit of a superior, like a superiority. Like it can kind of come off of that way in some ways. Like whenever you put out a tweet and say like, oh, like we have some Welcome to the Black Parade level stuff coming out, like my mind immediately, that's like a red flag for me. It's like, I don't know if I want to invest time in you because why would you say that? Like, why would you, you know, kind of attach a gravitas to you? And I get it, you know, you're trying to build hype around something that you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that can be a really tricky thing. So like for you, you posted something this morning that I totally believe in, which is be your own hype man. Because if you can't be your own hype man, why should anyone else? Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So can you kind of speak to that a little bit, like what that's been like for you? You know, you're self-promoting, you're recording everything yourself, you know, you're sending it to like mixing other, you know, you let other people mix it and stuff like that, but, or maybe the other people master it. Is that what you told me? You mix it, you do like a rough mix and then they master it for you.
So in terms of like the album and how the album went down, so I kind of demoed it for a long time and then I got in touch with the producer, Matt Heat, who works out of Stuff Studios in a place called Cone. And he's really good. He's done loads of really good work with loads of really good bands. And obviously, like, I've sent him these rough demos and he's like, right, okay, cool. Come to my studio and we'll track it properly and we'll work together and we'll do the bits. So I went over and I tracked all the stuff there and he's mixed it and he's mastered it and it sounds phenomenal. It sounds so good. And yeah, like I don't think half these songs would sound half as good if it wasn't for him putting the polish on it, like that. And that I'll say that forever. Like he's so good at what he does. But in terms of promotion, like really, I kind of learn by watching other people and see what works for them or how I react to what different people post. Because I don't know. Again, it comes down to this self-doubt thing and which sort of turns into a self-worth thing, which you don't really want to get too into. But if, especially because it's just me doing it, it's a lot of effort. So I have to put a lot of more thought into it to see like how it goes. A lot of the stuff is kind of, that I post at the time is kind of how I feel. So I'll only promote things that I really enjoy, like or enjoy, or especially when it comes to bands and other bands as well. Like, you know, for some people, like some of my friends in different bands, I am ride or die for them. Like I will support them no matter what, like endless. And I feel in general, there's not a lot of people that are like that. Like lots of people are very, you know, give to receive, which is, you know, which is fine, but it's not, I don't feel like it's the way to work around things. It's not productive to do that. Like, especially if you want it to be community, like a community-based thing. But yeah, I strive to create things around the theme of what the music is as well. Like So for instance, in terms of like Picture Perfect, when I got the guy who made the lyric video to make it, Zach Taylor, and he asked me, you know, what do you want to do on it? I was like, well, this song is, you know, a song I feel would fit really well on American Pie, or, you know, a naughty sort of teen comedy of that era. So when you're making me this lyric video, could you include films from that time in that period? And we made a list of those kind of films. And then I said, also, I want to kind of add in a tie into a future single, and then got him to add in some scenes from Eternal Sunshine, which obviously ties into the newest single. So kind of, you know, everything sort of a tease towards something else in terms of promotion, because nobody wants us to be the big things are coming band, you know, because you've seen it so many times where bands are just like, big things are coming. Like, I want the music to speak for itself. That's the best promotional tool for me.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And like, I also think about it in terms of like, a lot of times bands won't even tell you they're doing something until it's done. You know, like until a good portion of it is finished, you know, and they'll be like, all right, there's a new record coming out. Here's the newest single. The record's done, like, already, you know, and I think that's like the safest thing, because you can start working on the next thing or working on supplementary stuff like music videos and stuff like that. But it's kind of here, you know, it's kind of interesting to hear your process, because essentially you have to turn into like your own. You don't have anyone telling you like, oh, that was a great job on that marketing post, or like, you don't have people telling you, like, giving you commendation, saying like whatever. And I'm not saying that, you know, people need to like kiss our butts and stuff like that, but a lot of things are thankless. You know, a lot of things go without any sort of commendation, and no one is going to know how much work you actually put into whatever it is you're doing except for you, which can be hard, you know? Mm-hmm. And in a different way, I can kind of understand how that could feel, because, you know, I'm out here like, hey, want to be Critic Productions, yada yada yada, you know, and it doesn't really feel, you have like those few people that are in your corner that are like, you know, happy for you, but you're not getting feedback from people you'd like to get feedback from, you know. And yeah. I think that can probably, you know, and you can kind of speak, you can obviously speak to this however much you want to, but I think it can be kind of hard whenever you are sitting there on a project or you're thinking about how you're going to put something out, and then you're like, is it worth it? You know what I mean? Like, has there ever been a time where you're like, well, maybe I should just stop, you know, like maybe I should just quit?
So many times. There's so many, because I've been like doing Passion Follow for like the past 4 years, just over. So, and then people kind of really knowing me about the last year-ish. And it's just been so many times where I've just wanted to, you know, just throw in the towel and like, what's the point? You know, no one's really connecting with it. Like, is, you know, what is the point of doing it? And like, that's a sad reality to kind of face, because music for me is the only thing that I really, you know, give my all to. It's my, you know, my songs are sort of my diary, and sort of in aspects like a therapy session where I can, you know, I can sit there and pour the deepest, darkest, you know, parts of my soul, and then throw it into the world for other people to pick up and whatever. And I think being a creative person in general, in any kind of field within, you know, being a creative, is so hard, because it's sort of like, to describe it, it's kind of like, please give me your validation for the thing I've worked on, but then also, I don't need your validation. I think it's cool.
Yeah,
and it's exactly. Like a double-edged sword, isn't it? Like, and that for me is what it is. It's kind of like, if you like it, you don't like it, cool, whatever, but please like it. Like,
yeah.
and that's a kind of hard thing to kind of, you know, wrangle in your brain. Like, and I guess, you know, I can only speak for myself, but I imagine if it was like a full-time band situation, you know, those kind of thoughts would be easy to kind of quell, because you've got like the other people have brought in the creative as well. So you can ping off the, you know, oh, what do you think? How do you think it's going to be? And then the other people can be like, yeah, it's going to be this, or, oh, I don't know. And then you can, you know, you can talk about it. For me, because I'm like everything, I have to kind of be like the hype man and also the harshest critic. So that's kind of a hard duality to balance, where it's like, yeah, the song is sick, but also, is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, that song is sick, but also I suck at the drums. Like, you know, yeah. Like stuff. No, I get it. And, you know, I think you spoke to something that's really interesting. Like, for me, it isn't, I don't, and I guess, okay, actually, I want to ask the question then, and I want to lead with that. What keeps you going then? You know, you thought, you say there's been so many times you thought about quitting. What's the thing you always come back to where it's like, I got to do this? Like, why? Why keep going if you feel this way?
Because even though sometimes I feel like I suck, really, I believe in myself. Like, I think that what I have, it has some potential to grow into something potentially really good. That for me is really hard to admit, because I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to being self-critical. But I believe in my songs. Like, I believe in my songwriting. I believe in like my growth as a musician from when I wrote like my first songs to the songs I'm writing now. And I like to listen back to those sort of really early demos, and I wince like anyone else would when they listen to the first sort of stuff they released, because it's all teenage angsty and it makes no sense, and you're just like, oh. But like, it's the belief that, you know, I've got something that I feel like other people would like to hear, really, and, you know, that I am good within myself and I can do it and I can reach the heights that other people have reached. It might be taking me the longest way around to get there, but I feel like I'll get there eventually. And I feel like if I can't even believe in myself, then why should I expect other people to believe in me? Like, why should, if I give up on myself, then what's stopping other people from giving up on me? And that, you know, and that's it. That's it. Like, why should I expect other people to believe in my dream if I'm not able to believe in my dream myself?
That's beautiful. I mean, really, it's even if it is at your own detriment sometimes to like put the thing out, because like sometimes I'll put a video out and I'm like, ah, man, no one's gonna watch this, you know, why do I keep doing this? And then it always comes back to the thing of, because I want to do it, like you said, I believe in myself, like I believe in what I'm doing, like I believe there's value here for somebody. If one person finds value in this thing, amazing. Like that's if one person consistently finds value in whatever I'm doing for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
What else do you want? I mean, what else can you ask for? And, you know, I think it's what it comes down to, is like, you want to do this, you know? And I think that totally speaks to it, you know? So, you know, as creatives, you know, you said there's been so many times like you thought about stopping and what have you. Has there ever been a time where you thought like, maybe I should be doing something else instead of music? Or has it always been like, no, music is the thing like that I need to find myself in, you know?
Yeah, like music really has been the main thing my entire life since being like three, four, like being a kid and just like singing along to songs in the back of my parents' car, or making up little stupid songs when I'm walking around the playground, or rewriting songs of other bands and then not knowing it until many years later as a kid. Like, it's always been my passion. Pardon the pun. It's always been my passion. It's always been something that I've cared deeply with and resonated with. And, you know, that connection with music has grown as I've become an adult. And, you know, I find a lot of solace in the sound, and, you know, I think some people will understand that and some people won't understand that. Like, I think obviously you've got your creative brain and your analytical brain, and somewhere in the middle, I think that's where it all meets up. That's where you can listen to your critical thinking sort of, and you can sort of listen to a plethora of songs and think your way out of a tough jam in a situation, which I always find myself, that's how I deal with really bad situations in life. Like, I'll just throw in an album that, you know, will make me think about something, or some songs that'll make me think about something, and I'll kind of, you know, ease my way back using the lyrics, or, you know, the melodies, they'll kind of tentatively be with my brain. So I think I'd be useless at anything else. Like, I couldn't ever see myself being like a real adult with a real adult job where music isn't part of my future.
I love hearing that. I love being like, you know, like for me, I mean, we all have to have that, you know, it's almost like the alter ego, right? It's like, oh, like I'm Batman, but I'm really Batman, but I have to do this other thing too, you know, like to kind of like balance it out. And, you know, for me, it's like, I want to do this, you know, and you want to be playing music. You want to be doing the things that you're doing right now forever, like to make a living. But there's also the other thing where it's just a matter of time. Time is the biggest variable. There's a saying, then that this kind of keeps me going. You know, it's like, there's a saying that says it's not a matter of if you'll be successful, if you're putting effort into it. It's a matter of when. And, you know, there's the 10,000 hour rule. Like, you'll be world class in anything you do if you put 10,000 hours in. And to me, that's always been really encouraging because, A, that gives you something to work towards all the time. 10,000 hours is a lot of time to put into something, but it's with the idea that you're going to be, even if you're not quote unquote world class, you're going to be that much better and that much ahead of everybody else because you've put the time in to do it. And, you know, it's been nice to kind of hear you kind of talk about these things and kind of hear you talk about like where your head's at and what headspace you live in and, you know, where you're going with your music, you know, because I think it's something we can all definitely benefit from is kind of hearing your experiences. So one final question for you, you know, when's the next single coming out? Like, when are we going to hear the next bit of music?
So I've been thinking about this and I think I'm going to put out something new next month in April. I want to start being more consistent with my releases and, you know, kind of been good to the people who are supporting me because there's been like big gaps between sort of each release. So I kind of want to make it more consistent so people have something to look forward to.
Well, there you go. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Next month, Passion Flower is going to have a new track, a hot new track. So, Kyle, I have to say thank you so much for coming on the show today, man. I really, really appreciate you giving your time. I appreciate you taking the time to answer my questions and ramble and talk about potatoes and tea and, you know, put up with my digression, you know, cause that's what I do. I just, whatever comes to mind is whatever I ask. And then pretty much whenever it's like, okay, I don't have any other questions, then, you know, it fizzles out. So, you know, at the end of this, we're going to put a song. And I think if you don't mind, I'd like it to be picture perfect. So yeah. Are you good with sending me a track, you know, that I can use to show the good people that listen to Wannabe Critic Productions?
Of course, yeah.
Fantastic. That's awesome. Before we go, though, where can people find you? You know, what can people follow you on? You know, plug all your socials, do all the stuff.
Yeah, so I am pretty much everywhere. I'm on Facebook, Spotify, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. I'm on there doing silly dances like everyone else. At Passion Flower UK, but with none of the vowels because I'm edgy like that. Yeah, that's where I am. That is the place to be.
There it is. There you have it. That's where you can find Kyle and all the things that he's doing. He's doing great things over with Passion Flower, and I very much look forward to seeing what comes in the future. Before we go, you know, try and save the housekeeping towards the end of the show these days. I wanted to give a shout out to our Patreon producers for the month of March. We have HH Waxbar, we have Sage and Clove, we have Luke Collins, we have Zoe Chanel. Don't forget, you can go over to patreon.com/wannabecritic and honestly, there's all kinds of tiers. There's like just the tip jar tier. There's the early access tier. There is the request tier. And there's also the producer tier. And what seems to be the most popular, or what seems to be the least popular actually, is the request tier. But I wish that would be, you know, kind of what people want, because it basically ensures that you get to see me react or do pretty much anything, you know, at the request tier each month. So there's 10 of those available. There's 9 of those available right now. But honestly, if you made it to the end of this and you're listening to the show, I really, really appreciate it. Like, that's all I could really ask for anyways. But, you know, we talk about taking things to the next step. We talk about doing things in such a way to where you can have a layer of credibility. And Patreon is always going to seem like the natural way to do that as of right now. So thank you all so much for tuning in. Definitely check out Kyle with Passion Flower and all the stuff he's doing over there. And before we go, check this out. Say goodbye, Kyle.
See y'all later. Have a good evening, good day, good vibes. See you in a bit.